This is the Creating the Future podcast, and I'm your host, Jordan Krause. Today's episode is sponsored by Dr. Anthony Chavez and Desert Mountain Urology, Tucson's leader in no scalpel vasectomies. To learn more, visit www.desertmountainurology.com. I'm joined today by our middle school art teacher, Karen Parks. Karen, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Happy to have you.
Thank you.
So, Karen, you've been at TCDS for a handful of years.
Actually, a fistful of dollars, right?
A fistful. Yeah,
five years.
It is.
This
is your number five.
This is number five.
Tell us about your time here at TCDS, and then maybe sprinkle in a little bit about life before TCDS.
All right. So time here, I can say that I remember the first time that I ever saw your face. Okay.
Ooh, do tell.
So how is it I know what you look like, but that can forget perhaps what it is like to see your face? The first time I ever saw your face was in Indeed. You were a little icon, right? And it kind of brought me back to, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, Northern Virginia. Actually, oddly enough, but about 2 miles away from Mount Vernon, George Washington's home. Mm-hmm. I guess now they call it a memorial, but actually went to elementary school about a mile away. So there was this yearly pilgrimage to that place, of course, to see the great man, as it were, quotations. But so seeing you, it reminded me of when I would, you know, for one mucus-laden event, stay home from school. And I used to watch WTTG, which was, they had a show called Panorama. And it was sort of in the lull of the day. There's nothing to watch. But there are these two people that are sitting there. And it had Maury Povich back in the day. Okay.
I remember Maury.
So he's on this sort of circular stage. There are two chairs, very spare environment. But there was a little man that was in a circle. So I saw your image down there. And I think I had applied because I saw the position for language arts. I believe at the time it was eighth grade. And applied. And then almost immediately it spoke back to me. So I remember that, and then the interview was scheduled, and coming onto campus, the first thing I remember being here was that it was such, it reminds me of the movie Brigadoon, which is like a fantastic place that's only there for a day. Mm. Clearly, we're very lucky that it's here for so many days, but coming onto campus, it was Redbone playing, and it was Come and Get Your Love, and I thought, okay, I'll go get that. We'll see what's going on here.
So that was playing on the speakers outside? Okay.
It was almost like there was like this invisible force field coming from one place to another. Mm-hmm. And so walked in, and one of the questions that was posed to me was, do you want to teach math? And I was like, wait a minute. I'm here for ELA. And clearly math is not my forte in any way, shape, or form.
I don't remember that question being asked. Interesting. Okay.
And I remember thinking, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And, you know, since I've been here, I think what I really can attribute that to was I was seeing an open-mindedness, a splendid open-mindedness that exists in all things. So I walked in for one thing, but it was asked of me if I wanted to do something else. And I think that's beautiful. It was a matter of choice. I chose not to, but, and I ended up instead of with eighth grade, I ended up with sixth grade. And then I think I had one honors seventh, but teaching ELA. And that was 2019. So. Wow.
So break down the last 5 years. So 2019, a lot's happened since then.
It really has. I mean, I do remember that was sort of just a golden moment. And I remember sitting, at the time it was 9:05, now it's 1:21 in middle school, but I remember sitting there and I had the door open, and I remember watching two students run by. They were playing Happy Birthday on instruments. One was a saxophone and the other one was a clarinet, but they were running after each other and playing as it went by. And I was thinking, that's like Bigfoot riding a unicorn. I've never seen such a thing, unless it was Norman Rockwell or something like that. But so that's where it began. And then things pressed on. And, you know, so then we get to the holidays. And then we come right around to 2020. Mm. And, of course, we know how that turned out. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But definitely one of my favorite times during that time was that we used to meet. I think it was on Tuesdays at 10:30 in the morning, something like that.
Gosh, you remember everything, Karen.
my mind is a fertile place.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, we had some good chats and a lot of plans within our middle school, you know, ELA kind of communication space. And you brought in a really I think, unique background to the classroom, because your background is diverse, right?
Well,
in terms of your education and your interests. Yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
So in terms of education, I chose to study what I loved. And I was hoping that the rest of it would sort of follow suit. So my education involves English, degree in English, and then studio art and art history. Mm. So I chose those things. And I remember when I was going to pick out my courses, it was like going to a glittering Vegas buffet. I wanted a lobster at every elbow. I wanted to be able to make sure that I got all the things that made me happy and that they all made sense with each other. And so it was really curating what already interested me and what I already knew, and then sort of bringing it in from that point. So I've been able to use that here. Very, you know, and you put a lot of faith in me. You've given me a long leash, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So definitely, no one's asked me to teach math again, but in my
We've got that buttoned up.
Yeah.
yes, Dooley, Ms.
very
Shady,
well,
thankfully.
Very well.
Yeah.
But in my current incarnation, which of course is middle school art, from language arts, or ELA as it's called, we went online, and then we came back the next fall, and it was again online. But I realized, well, one of the things, I'm going to interrupt myself and say this, one of the things I remember from one of our Tuesday conversations mm-hmm. was the fact that we had discussed, I brought in a concern about a student's writing, and mm-hmm. it was supposed to be a paragraph, and the paragraph was very thin, and I remember, and it was adequate, it definitely conveyed the message, but it wasn't more than that. And you had said to me, and I always remember this, you told me, you said, maybe that's all we'll see right now, right? Maybe that's all we'll see, and maybe that's, you know, well, we may never see the end to that. And so I'm always thinking, I always remember that part, based upon what you said, that not everything that we do here, we're going to see the end of, but we can definitely in this moment, within the parentheses, as it were, be able to input something that's worthwhile.
Yeah, no, that's, it's true. Not just because I said it, because I know other people have, you know, conveyed that idea that I've, you know, been able to come across through, you know, video and books. But yeah, as teachers, we often don't see the full fruits of our labor. In fact, we never do. That's why it's really fun when former students come back years later and you
yes.
kind of get to know their story and you see some of that. But having that mindset, yeah, it takes a lot of kind of patience and kind of faith in your process. Because I think our industrial model of education has ingrained in us this idea that we need to see X, Y, and Z from all of our students within this timeline. It's like, that's just not how humans grow and develop. You know, we're all one of one, and there needs to be plenty of, I think, you mentioned autonomy. You've been given a lot of, like, leash. Those are
yes.
your words there, a lot of rope. Why is that important? Not just for you, but like how you take that notion and kind of apply it with your students.
Well, for me, I suppose when I think about it, when learning how to teach, going through student teaching, but the book work before that point, there was book work in between, but there was still the predominance of the book work beforehand. And one of the things that was, it's interesting that when you teach, as in going into the military, you sign a contract, right? You commit, okay? Mm-hmm. So the signing of the contract to me is perfunctory, but the commitment, you must be committed. And if you're not, then I think it will show. It, you know, definitely in whatever you produce, it will show. But one of the things that you would be committing to in being a teacher would be to be what they refer to as a lifelong learner and a reflective practitioner. Mm. So nothing can be particularly precious, in my opinion, in terms of what you have standards, but how you want to personalize in the process. The idea of taking those standards and interpreting them in a way that is useful to students in a way that it's memorable to them and something that they can kind of put their teeth into. Hmm. So that's how I see that autonomy, the idea. I love to read. I'm always reading. I love to research. I love just everything. I'm so interested in everything. I will frequently tell people that I don't remember your name because I want to know what you have to say, and I kind of forget that part. I kind of want to jump to the beginning. But also, I have a tendency to say as well, I already know about me. You know, I want to know about more about you because I already know what I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live with me all the time and I'm gas bagging it, the whole thing. And so when all is said and done, I don't know. I love the faith that you have in the fact that I believe it's hiring. I mean, not because just because you hired me. You had no idea. But I hope that I have been a fairly pleasant surprise.
Yes.
But so the autonomy, going back to thinking about... thinking about 2020 and COVID and being online, but I remember working with students in terms of language arts and really being dedicated to not overwhelming them with more from me. And so we kind of took, I would talk to students, sixth graders, and I would say, I knew that we had, students in common with Mr. Keevid, who at the time was teaching social studies. And I said, what are you working on in social studies? Because my background is art history. So what I decided to do was sort of take my class and tool it in a way that was useful to them. I could predict where he was going in history, and whatever writing they had to do, we could work on that. So to me, it's being flexible. And it's funny, the autonomy, you think, well, I mean, it's being flexible within reason, in my opinion.
Yes.
Reason and use.
Yep.
So, and I almost feel like from that speckled egg, that's where humanity sprang from, you know, the idea that we were able to do that, and that worked out fine.
Yeah.
So
talk about what's gone on in your art studio.
Well,
you've done a lot to that space physically.
Yes.
But there's also a lot of really neat activity, engagement happening in there. Break down what you're up to in middle school art.
Okay, well, we are presently, I call myself Shreddy Shredderson because now I suddenly look at things. We've been collecting paper throughout the year, but I'm looking as well at, you know, one of our responsibilities, or actually three of our responsibilities in art standards for the for Arizona is to reuse, repurpose, and recycle. So I have been shredding paper and making pulp out of it. And creating this sort of medium that is filling not only part of my refrigerator at home, but the two refrigerators that I have here. So I have to sort of push my sparkling waters in between in order to be able to have those. But I'm not suffering in any way, shape, or form. But what we're doing is essentially taking that medium and creating a fairly sturdy product by reusing, repurposing, and recycling paper around campus. So... I know that we do recycle, but it's kind of interesting. I showed you the one that I made that was called Math or Art Wins because it has math papers in it.
Yes.
So kind of silly, a little bit of an LOL, but that also is another way to show students how to write a museum label and the structuring of that in the sense that, you know, your name and the title and then whatever materials happen to be in there. And so, and the formatting of that as well, because there are certain fonts and differences and boldness, et cetera. So...
how does the physical environment of your space impact the way students kind of approach their own creativity and approach creating something or approach the process to making something that didn't exist before? Because you've done a lot physically to that space. You walk in and there's a lot of intention. So
thank you.
Talk to us about your process, kind of your why, kind of why you value your environment so much, or this isn't a phrase you've used, but you know, the environment, Miss Wanda uses this, you know, the environment's a third teacher,
right? Very nice.
In a lot of ways.
I love that.
So talk to us about your environment and how it teaches.
Okay. Well, I was going to say one of our service standards is environment speaks. So if the environment is speaking and it is a teacher, then I always loved growing up, I loved Willy Wonka, the old one. And I love the fact that whatever you looked at, there was something happening, right? So in that environment, the art studio, which I have been entrusted with, I wanted to make it so that students could sit down and I could ask them a question, say, for example, can you find complementary colors? And or if I gave them a test or something. And I love it when there are standardized tests and things have to be covered up because of the fact, and I proctored those before, and because of the fact that things are covered up, people still look at where the covered up part was. So I thought, okay, one of my responsibilities, implicit responsibilities in art, is to help students learn to see. And so I want them looking around at things. And you know, I want them to be able to remember that so that when they look out in their own environment in the world, that they can do the same thing. So purposefully, intentionally, there are all sorts of things the way that I describe. Textures, complementary colors are painted on the front of the cabinets. There are cubby holes in there, and each one of them is either black and white, shade and tint, or the primary and secondary. I mean, so it's, there's a lot of, so I can make reference to what's going on. I can point to something. Or can you, if I'm speaking to someone, say, ask them a question and they can point to it so somebody else can find a texture. Last year, talking about the evolution of things, I ended up teaching art second through eighth. And so that was very important in that environment for them, for students to be able to get up. I have a pillow that's corduroy, get up and touch the pillow and say, this has a texture. And so just making it, you know, so it's more interactive, but again, intentionally. Places to sit where students may want to just reflect and, you know, have a moment, you know, away from the group. Those things are important as well. So everything is sort of embedded in that, but not in a way that is fairly, it's almost not, it's not obvious to me.
Yeah, I would agree. You mentioned last year working with 7-year-olds all the way up to our middle schoolers. This year we created a full-time K-5
art
position, Ms. Kowalski, who we've had on here, and now you're focusing just on middle school. What have you noticed are the biggest differences working with elementary students? Now you're full-time with middle schoolers. What do middle schoolers teach you? What do they show you? What are you learning about that developmental stage in life through the lens of art?
It's far less, in its way, it's far less, of course, foundational and janitorial, as it were. I noticed, given what we were just discussing about COVID, in that room, there's been a succession of emperors, as it were. And so between trying to teach students online and art online, which seems, you know, bizarre.
It's like teaching karate online or something.
Right. So what I have noticed is that I really enjoy the fact that I'm able to lean more in their direction. And the room before was set up, the room is entirely set up, it's cordoned off in one way where there is a classroom environment and then there's a supplies area. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that they are able to better address, middle school students are better able to address their own standards. Before, it was more or less, for me, it was almost like working in a diner. I was, you know, prepping and, you know, from time to time, but part of middle school standards are to take care of the environment and the supplies within the environment. And to me, that creates a more intimacy with the environment, which is one of my goals, is having it be more where somehow, and I've started to work on this, where there's like a project planner, in the sense that it would, how did you address this standard? So having students, I introduced the standards in the very beginning, but how did you address the standard in this particular project? Hmm. And then so they have to reflect on it, and maybe they might not be able to see how they did, but if they are able to have choice, we always do better with choice. Mm-hmm. So if they are able to have choice in what they do, I can say, okay, here are your standards. Here are anchor standards for art. How are you addressing this if you want to do this? And then they can see, I might have to add this in order to make it fit, or what I'm doing is the way it should be, or this is simply something where I want to experiment. We discussed quite a bit the idea of playing in teaching, mm-hmm. And at school, but that's one of those things. Sometimes you just want to mess around with whatever the materials are and experiment with them, and that's what we're supposed to be doing anyway. It just shouldn't be seen as something other than that.
Sure. So you give your students a lot of creative autonomy to play, to explore, you know, learn about different mediums. What you also do really well is you establish norms in your space, and you have them very... visibly.
You experienced one of those today, right?
Yeah.
With the clapping.
Yes.
So, yes.
They're very visible around your room. And norms are, you know, for those listening who might not be aware, they're kind of group influenced, not rules, but ways in which we operate in a certain space, norms that we agree to. So talk to us about kind of that dichotomy of having plenty of creative freedom, a lot of autonomy, a lot of choice, but also having norms that are in place for kind of the collective good, and how you balance those two things and why they're both necessary in art in particular.
Well, I mean, respect in all things, right? So I think of one in particular where it's posted in front, where everyone's facing, and it has an elf next to it. And it reads, the art studio is a place of mutual respect and courtesy. So I know, and I believe this to be true, that if you apply that to everything you do, then, you know, that it's basic business. But in terms of moving around the room, another student teaching, Morey, is that you do attend to your environment. You look at flow. You look how, you know, at purpose of things. From time to time, I will ask them to weigh in on how they think things. Because we're colleagues, and I consider myself to be the management of the environment. But more or less, we make decisions together because it affects us. In terms of enforcing, I'm putting quotes in the air because you can't see that part, but enforcing, we'll say, norms. It's reminding. Mm-hmm. How do we move into the room? How do we leave the room? Why do we put backpacks in a particular place? And we talk about the safety of that, which, of course, brings us into other ways to be successful in this environment, to be safe in terms of, say, if we have a fire drill, et cetera. I always say that successful people can do two things: follow directions and control themselves, and then that applies to being in a fire drill. Mm. But the mutual respect and courtesy, that is the anchor to all of it. I would say that when they enter the room, students know that they are able to sit where they prefer, and then they make good choices. And there are times where I will say to them, you know, essentially, I don't want to mind your business. You know, you're old enough to mind your own business. If you're not having a good day and you want to sit here or there, just make sure that, you know, you do so in a way that's respectful to others. But I do know this, and this is something I'm pretty proud of, is that when I did student teaching, it was at Gridley, and it was one of my language arts classes had 40 students. And we did pretty well. I would say we did really well. But I did a practicum in this teacher's class, and I watched him, and he stood in front of the class, and he just waited. And they all righted themselves. And I said to him when it was over with, and I'm thinking, wow, I want to know how to do that, okay? Because he and I, we jibed in terms of how we saw things. I'm thinking, I'm in the right place. And so when I asked to do student teaching with him, he agreed. But I said, how long are you going to stand there like that? And he said, as long as it takes. And typically, I can do that now. That's one of the biggest norms, because if I need to be useful to them in any way I possibly can be, I need to be able to stand in front of them and get their attention. And so if I stand there and everybody, you know, there's a pin drop, that kind of thing, and occasionally, you know, I'll look over at somebody and they're moving something and they'll stop moving it. It's kind of like a, you know, it's like a Justice League power, you know. but it is to their use. So, like I said, that to me is the most important one, just in case of anything, that I need their immediate attention. But they're so helpful. They're so respectful. You know, they really appreciate the environment and want to make sure that it's a nice place.
I agree. I was walking by your studio about a week ago or so, and I noticed this quote.
Oh, yes.
On the outside of your building, very nicely adhered to one of your windows, looks really nice, by one of your students.
Yes.
A quote. Tell me about that and where that came from.
Well, the quote is, we are all good people in here. And it's funny, when I think about, again, when I was referring to the environment, when I was teaching ELA and humanities, my environment, I wanted it more like Barnes & Noble. I didn't want a bunch of things. I wanted things on the wall to be more instructional in terms of behavior. And so I was very careful, judicious in what I put up on the wall, rather than this is a noun, this is a verb. I wanted to be able to, you know, walk by and see something and be able to point to something and not say anything else, okay? Just point to it and then move on, or do we remember, that sort of thing. So one of them was try empathy first. So it was also a way to be able to show the implicit you in front of you try empathy first. But it was also instructional in that way. But also words have weight and then they kind of fell. It was sort of silly that way.
I remember that, yeah.
And then cool. We are human, do what is humane. All the, you know, being able to show certain, I don't know, there were certain ways. There's also, my goodness, I think of Marvin Gaye. There was one part where it said, be your own piece of clay. There's the song where he, you know, he's singing, everybody wants somebody else to, you know, to be somebody, their piece of clay. But so you be your own piece of clay. You be the master of your destiny. Hmm. So that quote came from a moment where somebody had made something, and I don't know who did it, but I wasn't interested in Scooby doing it. It was just somebody had smashed something or pushed something down that somebody else had made and pretty much, you know, didn't take care of it and destroyed it, you know. And I had a conversation with everyone about it. That's it. I do that as well. The idea of having a conversation, it's only fair. I don't know who did it. And I said this, you know, I have to mention this to all of you because, and I say the same thing, I don't believe anybody in here did that, but it got done and I have to mention it. And the student that, the quote there, that student stood up and who is definitely like maturation this year, is definitely emerging a leader, did something yesterday that I said, oh, aren't you a good little leader over there? I see you. And he smiles, right? But he said, I don't believe anybody in here could do this because we are all good people in here. And I thought, that deserves to be out there because it's the truth, you know, speaks to us all. And we just moved on from it. I said, I'm not going to make any sort of investigation. If you did it, live with it or find a way to make it right. And we don't want to deal with it. Haven't had any problems since. I mean, really, take responsibility.
Yeah.
So
I think it's clear that you've given students trust. You've given them responsibility so that they can discover the goodness in their capabilities, their potential, them as a group. You know, it's very clear that that quote that that student just kind of came up with, which is now semi-permanently enshrined on the building, that has to come about under the right kind of conditions. And I think you're really a master of having those norms. When kids walk into that space, they kind of really know what things should look like and sound like, but yet they feel empowered to do the right thing and to take initiative and, you know, and to take the lead. And, you know, I think it's this misconception that our default mindset with kids should be, they don't know better. They shouldn't be trusted to do this. They need to be controlled. They need me to help them get through this day. But I've just seen it time and time again, especially in your class, when our default is to trust kids and to model for them, they learn and discover things about themselves that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to, you know, under kind of stricter, harsher, less trusting conditions. So I think that's just that quote on the wall, there's such a wonderful representation of what happens in your room and that environment.
Thank you.
What are your kind of big hopes and dreams for middle school art? When you project into the future, what are some projects, things you see you and your students accomplishing together?
Well, I mentioned before making those vessels with the pulp and then giving them, it's important to give them responsibility. And that there were jobs in order to be able to make the pulp and then to make the medium, to mix the joint compound and the oil and vinegar of all things, but also glue to make these and bag them up. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of watching people emerge a leader, okay? So I had several situations, and you have to be able to accept the mess in it. And the mess doesn't bother me. Each time that we've been outdoors making that, it rained. And so I was able to kind of, you know, tidy it up. But I don't want anyone to be self-conscious about that, you know, in any way, shape, or form. So one of the things I'm looking forward to, and this has really been happening more this year, is to be able to, the back of the art studio has been developed so that there are places where students could be outdoors next year.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that as something that will be coming along. Also, just sort of recovering from, you know, the space in terms of COVID and just getting the kiln up and running again. You say, what is it? Slow is fast, right?
Slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. There you go. In paraphrasal, I clipped it, but I do believe that it's just a matter of just, you know, pacing and not putting too much on yourself in order to be able to make those things happen. But my goal for them, we mentioned autonomy, is for them to be able to come in and say, you know, this is the project I want to work on. I don't want them to be able, my goal, my job is to allow them to have experience with particular materials, but how they do that should be more guided by how they want to do that within the reason. And again, the development of that project sort of planner that I've been doing that has to do with standards. Mm. So standards for Arizona, it is to create, it is to respond, it is to connect, and it is to present. So we just had, of course, that lovely mosaic from Ben's Bells. And I was able to go and visit with the people that were installing that with one of my classes. And it was a nice way to connect with them, but also to sort of see how that goes in terms of how you affix that to the wall. Apparently, it's not being affixed to the wall itself, but it's on another, I guess it's...
Like a backer board?
Yes. So I learned that it was something you put into a shower, which is really neat, you know? Yeah. I love to learn, and I love knowing that that's what it is. It's kind of being taken behind the curtain. So, but you and I had spoken about, at one point, having, you know, mosaics around campus. Mm-hmm. So sort of coming together with the idea that more of the... I guess you could say the earthy side of things could be out back, where all these little processes could be going on out back, and then in front could be when you blow through with the tour, which I always love. And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with the, you know, having the little messes out front, but because that shows. But at the same time, I kind of have notions for what I'd like to do on that concrete out front. So there's that. But with the kiln going in, I was able to, or going into action, we just had serviced, I was able to speak to the people from Ben's Bells and kind of get an idea of how they produce what they do. And some of the students, my second period, they were able to glaze them. So that as well, you know, it all sort of connects in its way, because we're also working on that project down on the field, which will eventually spell champions, okay? Yeah. So the idea of a project where students are able to learn how to paint, as in house painting. So cutting in and then using rollers, et cetera, and care of the materials. But that also translates into other things, even, you know, cookie decorating and glazing, you know, the tiles. They helped glaze the tiles that went on the mural, and also did that with fifth grade. So it was able, they were able to know how to cut in, transfer that skill to something smaller, and then transfer it to someone else. So sharing that learning and moving forth. And I can envision mosaics everywhere.
We got a lot of square footage.
I'm looking now. I'm seeing it.
A lot of wall space.
Now that I can picture it, I can definitely picture it. So also out front, we've had math. They've been working on the planters for their garden. Is it called the Garden of Geometry? Is that what it is? The Geometric Garden?
Yeah, Geometric Garden.
Geometric Garden.
Garden of Geometry. I kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, so they've been, I actually have Mr. Dooley's saw in my room. So it's nice to be able to, you know, there's space in there. It's a wonderfully big room. But they're building out there. And so there's that word, the word we've been talking about, Trump Lul, or Trump...
I couldn't say it. Say it again.
Okay, it's Trump Lul. Trump Lul.
Trump Lul.
I know, not even. I'm never gonna. It's like I have to go to the Croissant Academy in order to be able to say it right.
And what does it mean?
It means it's sort of a, it's like a visual. It's a visual illusion. So if I had painted, for example, on this wall, something that looks like what's outdoors, like you could walk into it, mm-hmm. right? So I like the idea of. With now that I and I also got the scraps that came from the project, so I'm rubbing my hands together like Snidely Whiplash, trying to think of what I'm going to do with them, because I want to learn how to use the saw. But the idea of making engaged flowers behind the planters, so that when nothing's planted, I'm able to. It looks like it is from a distance, you know. So that's that.
You know. So you'll have some of those geometric garden beds around your art studio.
Yes. Yeah. And they seem to be, they're not going to be affixed. They seem to be something that could be mobile. And also that little, little bush that was planted. So they're around that.
That poor little guy.
I know. Texas Ranger, I guess that's what it's called. But yeah, he's the little Texas Ranger that could.
Yep.
So he's still there, but they planted, they made their planters around it. So
call him Chuck Norris. Well, it's still going strong.
Still going strong. Little Texas Ranger there. But so now we're just trying to determine, because again, speaking to Mr. Dooley and Mrs. Shady, the idea that, you know, what are we going to do on the outside of the planters? Mm. So, and the planters, the goal with the planters is to be able to grow materials for dyes. So, and which brings me to something else, because like I said, I'm gas bagging it over here. The idea that at the end of this month, we are having the, having volunteers from the Fiber Arts Guild come in and teach students about crocheting and knitting. So looking forward to that too. It'll be relevant to that. Probably going to be doing some dyeing of wool before then, just to put the little science in it. Mm. So I had no idea that so much science and math would be in my life, but it certainly is, and I embrace it. So,
so you have taken on math to go full circle from your that interview question that was apparently asked 5 years ago in an, in an ELA interview.
Well, yeah, just in the way, math. And it's in a way that, that you know, that students can see it too. Like, yeah, there is math in this. So,
well, what's cool about that project and many of them that you're doing is they exude our mission, which is to connect learning, right? Fostering ideas, connecting learning, personalizing that process. And when you can, when students, when you give students the ability to have an experience to where they're able to kind of connect some of those dots and see the connection between science and math and art without you having to give them a lecture or, you know, them having to, you know, consume a textbook, that also reinforces that, that phrase that we often use, experience before explanation. It's one of the best ways to really deeply learn something is to experience it kind of mind and body, and then that explanation then has kind of some fertile soil to land on, so to speak. So I love that that happens in your space.
Thank you. I mean, it's like making the medium for sculpting those paper mache like vessels again with the, I call them ingredients because they really are. And we're using measuring cups and, you know, discussing how to do this, you know, how do we add, we're adding fractions of course, but also little tips, like little hints from Heloise, like the idea, if you put a little bit of oil into one of the cups, you can pour in the glue or you can pour in the joint compound, it slides right out. You know, it's easy cleanup, right? And there, it already has oil in it. So little things like that, and trying to do like an anticipatory set. Who knows how to bake? Who does baking at home? And then you kind of know who you can sort of rely on, and others can say, well, I, you know, I cook this, I cook that. Well, baking, it requires more specificity in terms of, making sure that the ingredients, we have enough of these things, they each have their purpose. And we talk about doubling recipes, you know, should you double a recipe? They say not to. I've had disasters before at home where I'm like, oh, I can do that. And no, no, there's a reason why, you know, it just, it changes it. So just the girth of it, I think. So. Yeah.
Well, Karen, we're lucky to have you here at TCDS. In your 5 years, you've added a lot of value to our whole school, our middle school in particular. And so thank you for serving well
in
the art department and helping students to develop responsibility, connect their learning, create something that didn't exist before. I think we all have that innate desire to want to do those things, and you're providing that environment. And so our students in our school are better off for that. So
thank you
for that. And thanks for coming on today and having a little chat.
Thank you for trusting me with the whole thing. I really appreciate you.
We'll do it again.
Thank you.